Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lynn S., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Today is Friday, August the 2nd, 2024, and we're continuing our study of the Big Book in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 36, the third paragraph. Thus started one more journey to the asylum, through one paragraph ending with, if only he mixed it with milk, and sharing on that one paragraph. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Tenzin P, 12 Traditions, Anita P, and readers of the text, Harlan G, Anne-Marie M, and Katie G. The reference numbers for yesterday, Thursday, August the 1st, the 7 a.m. meeting, 216. 22, and the 10 a.m. meeting, 21623. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And this morning, Tenzin P. is going to be reading the 12 steps for us. Good morning, Tenzin.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Tenzin P. checking in from New York. And here are the 12 steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continues to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us or to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you very much. Wishing everyone a blessed day.
Thank you, Tenzin P. And Anita P. is going to be reading our 12 traditions. Welcome, Anita.
Good morning, everyone. This is actually Anita L. from outside of Philadelphia. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you. Have a great day, and I pass.
Thank you, Anita L. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we're resuming our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter More About Alcoholism. On page 36, the third paragraph, thus started one more journey to the asylum. And Harlan G., would you get us started, please?
I'd be happy to, Lynn. Thank you very much. I'm Harlan G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. Thus started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. Here was the threat of commitment, the loss of family and position, to say nothing of that intense mental and physical suffering which drinking always caused him. He had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if he only mixed it with milk. Okay, taking a look at this paragraph, if we're not careful, we can sort of lose something in the translation because we see this word asylum. And if you're anything like me, you kind of think to yourself, well, it's a treatment center and they're going to have meetings there and they're going to have decent food there and they're going to have a nice doctor there that's going to understand alcoholism. They're going to, no, none of those things were true. Because you have to know that an asylum in the 1930s, previous to the advent of the Big Book and previous to the emergence of AA as an organization, were horrible, horrible places. The stigma of alcoholism was intense. These asylums had nothing like what we're picturing in our minds. They were dreadful places with locks on the doors and locks on the windows and punishment for the alcoholic. They were warehoused there. They were not treated there, and they were dreadful places. The threat of going back to the asylum, remember he had been there before, was nothing that could have stopped him. The disgrace, the humiliation, the embarrassment, the shame, the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization that the compulsive overeating always caused me did not even give me pause in the face of Chips Ahoy, Kit Kats, Doritos, you name it, pizza, you name it. These thoughts were easily pushed aside. And when we look at this sentence here, it says, of that intense mental and physical suffering, which drinking always caused him. The key word there is always. There was never a time that his drinking did not disgrace him, yet because of the power of alcoholism and because of the power and efficiency of the mental blank spot, the built-in forgetter, he kept drinking and drinking and drinking alcoholically because he's an alcoholic. That's what alcoholics do. And yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk. We're again referring back to the power of addiction. We're looking at the mental twist with its evil sidekick, the mental blank spot. The mental blank spot is that built-in forgetter, and that is what, that is what Jim had. Jim is an alcoholic, and no matter how many people sponsored him, because remember, it says on page 35, sponsored him. We did this and we did that because they didn't want him with the same person over and over again. And then on page 36, yet he got drunk again. We asked to tell me exactly how it happened. There was a group of them that sponsored him. No matter what happened, no matter how many times he reviewed what happened, he could not prevent the next alcoholic episode, nor could I prevent the next binge with food, because every reason in the world not to binge on food presented itself to me beautifully. And yet nothing I could do to prevent it until God, in his infinite wisdom, through the power of these steps, intervened. So I have not found it necessary to binge in 25 years. Thanks, Lynn, for your service with that.
Thank you, Harlan G. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you share it on Wednesday or Thursday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It really does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Priscilla.
Katie G. from Boston.
Lisa N.
Okay, let me tell you, please, who I heard, and then we can pick up from there. I heard Priscilla, Katie G., and Lisa. Who else was there, please?
Nicole S.
Jennifer
C.
R. from Texas.
Christina J.
Okay,
D.
Let me tell you who I got again, please, because I've got my lineup. Just writing it down. Okay, I heard Priscilla, Katie G., Lisa, Nicole S., Jennifer C., somebody from Texas, and Christina J. So there's
Hannah
our lineup.
Hannah Yetta from Texas.
Thank you. Okay, we have our lineup now. And if everybody could please give me your last initial and where you're calling from when you share, that would be great. So Priscilla, it's your turn, followed by Katie G. Good morning, Priscilla.
Good morning. Thank you so much. And hi, everybody. I am Priscilla H., grateful to be physically, quote, recovered, but in all other ways recovering from my eating disorder and some other addictions. Well, before the sun rose in New Jersey, where I live this morning, and also before it rose in the deep south part of Alabama, where I was born and raised, I turned 88 years old. So this is my birthday show. Here's what I've written. For me, the whiskey in the milk, quote, is anything that can be ingested that has been sweetened with sugar.
Okay.
It's solid. I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yep, there's somebody unmuted, but I think we'll take care of that. Thank you. Please keep going, Priscilla.
Okay. Anything that's been sweetened with sugar in any of its solid or liquid forms, be they natural or artificial. I used saccharin tablets, the pink, the yellow, the blue packets, all of that stuff in great amounts. And here's some of the things that my BFF, as I like to call the God of my not understanding, has included in the things that have come to me since I've been attending Vision. Those artificial sweeteners, I used to think, can't possibly hurt me because, you know, they don't put any pounds, they don't have any food value, they don't have any calories. That's what I used to think. But my BFF has revealed to me that even though they may have saved me from hundreds of pounds of weight gain, they also kept my cravings for the taste of sweet awake, alive and kicking. And so my BFF told me to get rid of those, and I did. Completely get rid of all artificial sweeteners, as well as real sweeteners, be they in solid or liquid form. Also, my BFF told me, do not look at your potential binge foods or beverages. You are a very visual person, Pris. If you look at it, it will eventually just jump into your mouth without my hands even being involved. So I must not even see it, and that's the way I operate today about that. And then the third thing that God has said to me, when you have a food thought, what could I eat, what could I eat, what could I eat? And this does happen to me from time to time, fairly often. God said, don't ask me to make it go away, that thought. Instead, ask me, what's going on? There's always something that I don't want to do, or I don't know how to deal with, or I can't even recognize.
Time,
and
please.
God says, okay, thank you for letting me share. There are some other things that I have come to me, but these are some of the most important things that I've learned since I've been coming to Vision. Do step 10 and do step 11 all day long, every waking moment. So thanks for letting me share, and with that, I'll pass. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Priscilla H. from New Jersey. Next, we have Katie G., followed by Lisa. Good morning, Katie G. from Boston.
Hey, Lynn. Thanks for taking the meeting. This is Katie G., recovered in Boston. And, yeah, I mean, how many hours did I spend in therapist's office trying to have the knowledge about myself as a compulsive eater? You know, the knowledge that my parents were not great parents, the knowledge that if I eat a little bit of sugar, I binge my brains out, the knowledge that I have whatever trauma. Like, how many hours did I try and spend trying to understand, you know, what my problem was? And it never worked, because it says all reasons, every single reason, my children, my husband, my life. I'm telling you, my life could be pushed aside. Why? Because I want relief. I am a relief-seeking missile. I borrow from tomorrow so that I feel relief today. In other words, I don't care what happens tomorrow. If I can feel that relief, that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by getting on the scale, that comes at once by starving myself, that comes at once by over-exercising. And foolish ideas, for me, that foolish idea is that knowledge. You know that place in your belly that knows that it knows that it knows. It's that place that says, you know what, Katie, you used to chew $400 worth of gum a month. Why pick it up now? You know what, Katie? Diet soda isn't going to hurt you this time, and here's how. And the minute I pick those up, I am running around the grocery store like a fiend, like a bat out of hell, trying to get my diet soda, right? And so today, you know, I have to remember, too, like I still have foolish ideas. Yes, I get proper use of the will, and thanks be to God, I can ask God for an intuitive thought or a decision. But my thoughts are not always healthy. My thoughts are not always, hey, you know what, this is going to hurt me if I get on the scale and look at the numbers. Hey, you know what, I need to stand in the mirror another 15 minutes staring at my body, right? Like things like that. And the only thing that brings me freedom is looking at where I'm disturbed, accepting responsibility, and guess what? Helping others. How do I get away from foolish ideas? Ask God for help. Get rid of your disturbance and help others. And thanks be to God, we have a solution today, and God will guide us. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Katie G. from Boston. And next up is Lisa. Lisa, could you please give us your last initial and where you're from?
Sure, and thank you for your service this morning. It's Lisa, N as in Nancy, from Wisconsin. Grateful, compulsive overeater, but recovered by God's grace and mercy today. And I tell you, this is so important because it talks so much about it says drinking, but for me, it's thinking always. I replace that in my mind because I get those foolish ideas, and they're not always about food. There's something else that bothers me or thinks that I have to be in control or take care of something or do something, and I forget that I have a higher power that is in charge of my life. And that's the important part of this whole book, is to depend on a higher power. And it's on page 86, I know I'm jumping ahead, but on 86, I have to ask God when I wake up to direct that thinking, because I'm very much a person who could slip into self-pity, even dishonesty. Yesterday, we're having an insurance problem, and I was thinking, I wonder if somebody could, and I'm like trying to figure out a way that we can get more money. It's like, wow, that is dishonest. And I have to have my thinking cleared of wrong motives by a higher power. I can't do that myself. So when I start down a path that isn't sane or that is selfish or dishonest, I need help. And I need my fellows, but I need to cry out. I need God. I need help. I'm going down some insane path with worrying or jealousy or depression, whatever it is. I need help. And thank God for this program, because I never had the knowledge of that help that I needed. I thought it was always I had to pull myself up by my bootstraps and do it again, or whatever it was, diet again, but I'm so grateful for this program because I don't have to do it alone. And thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Lisa N. from Wisconsin. Now we have Nicole S., followed by Jennifer C. Good morning, Nicole.
Hi, this is Nicole S. from Colorado. Thank you so much for your service. And this is such a good reminder for me, first of all, of that physical and mental suffering that it always, you know, eating always caused me. And when I would muster self-control from what I saw it as, and, you know, I'd be able to stop. And it was miserable. My mind was just racing, as there's food there. I'm not eating it. And all I was thinking about was that food. And then the physical suffering, binging and purging was part of my past. And it would take 30 hours. I timed it one time to see how long it would take me to start feeling better after, you know, binging and purging. And so it was just torture. And that, you know, my first over seven years in program, I never heard the message that I needed to put the food down and that this is a physical and a mental, you know, disease. And, you know, I did so much control in that time and thought I could control it. And, you know, I heard many things like a college professor said, well, it takes 30 days to create a habit. So I thought I just need to go 30 days without binging and purging, and then I'll have that habit. And I got really close to that 30 days many times, but never made it. You know, I read another book that just said I needed to have all the, my binge foods in my house of, you know, ridiculous quantities, so my mind would just know that I will always have it there, and then I'll be able to eat it moderately. Well, of course, that didn't work. And I'm just so grateful that when I heard the message, you know, through this meeting and other meetings, that I have to put the food down and I have to work the steps. And that was something I hadn't heard for so many years, and just so grateful for recovery and this program. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nicole S. from Colorado. Next up, we have Jennifer C. Please go ahead, Jennifer.
Good morning, everybody. Jennifer C. recovered in Greenville, South Carolina. So grateful for your service this morning and everybody shares. You know, I used to think that step one was all about being done. I just had to be done, right? And I would make these calls on my day one morning, right? Like I'd wake up after a horrible binge and I'd say, okay, I think I'm done now. I think I'm done now. It was so horrible. I just ate myself into an oblivion. I can't imagine it getting any worse. I'm all done. And 3 days later, I was back in the food. Because suddenly all the reasons for being done, they didn't matter. All that mattered was some ease and comfort that came at once. And I remember when step one was knowing that I wasn't going to be done. It doesn't matter how bad my binge was. It doesn't matter how bad I want this. It doesn't matter that it's destroying my health, my teeth, all the things. Like, I'm not done. Do I believe that I have a disease? A diseased mind that literally forgets all the reasons, all the pain. Step one is about, I'm not going to be done unless I have a spiritual awakening. Do I really believe that? Or do I believe I still have control over being done or not done, or I'll start tomorrow, or I'll start after the weekend, or I'll start on the first of the month? Because that means I don't believe that I'm powerless, because I think I have the power to start when I want to. And so my sponsor has always said, when you really firmly take a step, you got to feel that other foot automatically go into the next step. Because if it means that I'm never done, if step one really means that I'm not done because I have a disease, then I have to automatically be going to step two, which is but God, right? And I have to believe that there's insanity. If I'm going to be restored to sanity, I have to accept that there's an insanity going on, that the very same brain that just said I'm all done is going to have a suddenly moment, and nothing is going to matter but ease and comfort that comes at once. And so this power greater than me, right, is this disease. I have a power greater than me when I walk in the door. It's called this disease. It's greater than me. And step two is all about, I need a power greater than it. And there's one power that's greater than this disease in my life, and it's God. And so then I turn all my tenacity and I turn all my attention to saying, okay, now what? Tell me what to do. And here's the thing. Oftentimes, the power greater than me is the phone. The food or the phone. Well, what do I do when I want to eat? You pick up the phone. Well, I already made 3 calls today. Make 3 more. Make as many as it takes to get to bed abstinent. Because
time,
that's
please.
The power greater than you. Before you feel that connection to God, that power is still there for you because we're all here for you every single day. So keep picking up the phone. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Jennifer C. from South Carolina. Christina J., it's your turn, followed by Hannah Yetta R. Good morning, Christina.
Morning, Lynn. Morning, everyone. I'm really glad Harlan mentioned the asylum and how they used to be, because it made me think about the asylum in my head when I go to, well, that I go to whenever I use, and that I went to for years and years and years, because I had to try all the suddenlies. I had to try them all. And now they make me ill to think about. Now when they try to get in, I'm like, get back, Satan, not today. You know, and God, who's the armor in front of that thought? My higher power. I don't want to go back to the asylum in my head, in my body, the intense physical and mental suffering. But I had to get to the point where I was ready. That I tried every type of way to put whiskey in the milk, to eat protein after I, you know, had a dessert, whatever the foolish idea was. Because my dis-ease in my soul really wants to heal. And it's kept at me through the years. And my only comfort to keep it down was the food. But see, I believe this is a disease of the soul, and I've got stuff down inside that wants to be healed so I can be free. So I'm grateful that this addiction was here, because it allowed me to get so miserable that I had to find this program. Something led me to this program. Something loves me and wants me to heal. That's why I'm here. I'm here because that's something, that love, that wants me to live and bring the message to other suffering children of the higher power, wants me to be of service. But I had to try everything, because the only comfort I had was the food for many, many years. So when someone said, put down the food and work the program, I had to try every way, because my disease kept coming up. I'm uncomfortable. I'm unhappy. I wasn't through the steps yet, or I got through the steps and I wasn't working it like I should. So I kept going back to the food because I kept wanting comfort. This guy, to me, was uncomfortable. He took a drive to the country. He was uncomfortable. He wasn't paying attention to the fact that he was uncomfortable. He pushed it aside like I did many, many times. Or I go on autopilot numb and I don't even know what's wrong with me. And suddenly I'm thinking of something, you know. But now the food is a warning. If that thought comes along, I know it's a warning. And I know I can't go to the food, and I've got to go to my fellows. I've got to make those calls. I've got to write a Dear God letter. I've got to do a 10-step. I've got to do whatever. But I'll tell you what, karma in the bank, good karma in the bank, good recovery in the bank is that I start my day every day, and I do it through the day, and I keep that bank full of recovery. And so I don't have the disease that wants to heal, the leftovers, has a chance to come up and say, hey, there's something bothering me today. What you going to do about it? And you know, the allergy says, well, how about eating? And I say, nope, I got other things to do. It's going to keep me clean and sober and precious to my fellows and to God. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Christina J. And next is Hannah Yetta R. from Texas. Good morning, Hannah Yetta.
Good morning. And how are you today? I'm terrific. So my name is Hannah Yetta R. from Texas. And I want to thank everybody for all their shares. I want to thank you, the moderator. I can't remember who you are. okay. Anyway, thank you for your service. And, you know, I'm also was glad that Harlan brought up the asylum, because what brought me to, and for the some of you older folks would, might remember this, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and it was about an asylum, and it was awful, and what they did to people, and that's when they would do, I don't know what they're called, but when they go into your brain and change it so that you you were like a zombie. And if you caused too much trouble, then that's just what they did. But it was a very scary thing. And it kind of brought me to the asylum. I knew that asylum wasn't, when I read it, you know, the last couple of days, about the asylum, I knew it wasn't a treatment center or, you know, what we go to now, because I've been to a lot of different centers and things, and many times I ended up there from eating or not eating. One time they just told me I was a dry drunk, and I just needed to work a better program. And so they put me into the Alcoholics Anonymous area, and that was the best thing that could have happened to me. But, you know, there was a couple other things I wanted to share on here. Nothing of the intense mental and physical suffering. You know, I went through a lot of mental and physical suffering with my eating. It was, you know, I ate until I couldn't breathe. And I had surgery to lose weight, three of them. And one of them made a little bitty hole, you know, so I couldn't eat past that. And I would fill up and I would scream, rolling on the floor. I remember rolling on the floor, crying, please, God, please, just let me live through this and I'll never do it again. It just hurts so bad. And it finally went through slowly. And the intense pain was, I can't even describe it. And I could finally breathe again. And within 10 minutes, I was doing the same thing. The same thing. Ending up rolling on the floor again, screaming. You know, I put whiskey in the milk. I just kept saying, it's okay, it's okay. No matter what it was. I couldn't quit no matter what. Thank you. And the only thing that helped me, let me just finish with this. The only thing that helped me was a spiritual experience, God, my higher power. It was a miracle that I even lived through that, because this whole thing is a miracle. And don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Hanayeta R. from Texas. For those of us who might have come on the line a little bit later this morning, we're continuing our study in the big book on the chapter More About Alcoholism. We're on page 36, the last paragraph. Thus started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. So the line is now open for sharing on what we just read. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Wednesday or Thursday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once, as it does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Marion K.
Leanne.
Sarah.
W.
Yes.
Leslie W.
Elizabeth C.
Okay,
North Carolina.
Let me tell you who I heard, please. I heard a Marion K. or Darian K., I'm not sure, Leanne, Leslie W., and Elizabeth. Now, I missed a gentleman, and then there were another couple of people. Who was that, please?
Pete Justin C., North Carolina.
Okay, I've got Pete B. and Justin C. Was there anybody else?
Lauren N. from New York.
Okay, I think we've got our lineup then. Let's see. We have Marion K., Leanne, Leslie W., Elizabeth, Justin C., Pete B., and Lauren N. And when you go to share, please tell us your last initial and where you're from. Marion K., please go ahead.
Hey, Lynn, it's Darian K. with a D. That's okay. And I'm calling from Western Mass in the Berkshires. Very gratefully recovered and happy to be on the line with all of you this morning. You know, there's a song, You're Fooling Yourself, and by Styx, if anybody knows it. And, you know, that's what my disease does. It fools me. And I believe the lies that it tells me, that this is okay or that is okay or it's not so bad. that way just yet, or I'm going through X, Y, and Z, and I need to be gentle with myself. These are the things that I tell myself. That's what my mind, that dialogue in my mind is all about. And it does me no good. It is not helpful in any way, shape, or form. And so, thank you, God. Thank you, God, for this big book and the way that Bill describes this particular person and how milk is so soothing, right? You think about milk and babies drink milk and how special milk can be and good for your bones. it's like that. Oh, such blinders that we can have and that I can have if I allow myself to, the justification and the rationalization. And I loved when someone said rational lies. I love it. And I had never heard that in 30 odd years. So thank you. Thank you for all your pearls of wisdom that I can take with me for today. And so for today, there are certain things I need to do for my particular program. And one of those lies I told myself is I was in program for like 15 years. I didn't need to measure my food. Well, I'm a quantity junkie. I'm like, give me more. Make that plate full so that my eyes can be satisfied and then I'm satisfied. And so for me, I need to measure my food. It's very important for me. And I tried not to do that and I put some weight on and it was not a good scene. So I know for today there are certain things about my particular program, and this is a personal program, right? And we have many different ways of working the program. So I need to say that too. But the bottom line is I need to know what I need to do for me and not rationalize and justify to the point where my disease, is alive and well and probably even fiercer. That's the word, fiercer, more fierce than when I came in 30 years ago. I really believe in my heart that I have not done a lot of things and that my disease is progressing right now. They used to say push-ups in the back parking lot or whatever it is. And so, I believe that today. And so I'm so grateful that I have this program and these reminders. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you, Darian Kay. Next up is Leanne, followed by Leslie W. And Leanne, if we could please have your last initial and where you're calling from.
Hi, Leanne S. I'm calling from Florida. And the thing that's in my mind this morning about step one is the sincerity for me to let go of things that have blocked me. I've gone through a period of really good abstinence in the past, but my sincerity to let go of my main drug, which was control over my weight, body shape, size, all of that, wasn't sincere all the way. And, having that chink in the wall led to a relapse of severe anorexia. And today I realized that I'm never hopeless in this program. Because no matter where I'm stuck and no matter how bad things are, I always have the ability to ask God to help me be sincere, bring me to a place where I am sincere, to let go. Like, I was looking at my control and all the things I did with control as a warm, fuzzy blanket, and I don't want to look at it that way. That is not God's view of my personal control. So I'm asking him to bring me to a place where I sincerely will let go the control of the anorexia. I present as an anorexia, but I am a food addict, and I have to do all the things that a food addict does. I get very addicted to substances, and then I try to control them. Today... I know there's always hope. God is always with me. No matter how badly I feel stuck, I know that if I sincerely pray, he eventually gets me to a place where I'm well. And it could be a lot of pain. It could be some kind of, it's unfortunately, that's a scary prayer. But it's a prayer, and it's a place that I can go to when I know I'm really stuck. So for today, you know, all those years of abstinence were wonderful, but in the background, there was a certain part of the aspect, like I have all forms of the disease, and that form of the disease really progressed. So today, I know I'm not hopeless, and I just have to continue to ask and seek and knock and never let go, because I know he has a better life for me. It's not normal for, I mean, I would see people in the rooms eat their meal and go on with life. I would eat my meal and have to make sure I wore it off before I could eat my next meal. That is not peaceful. That's not a peaceful way to live. So I don't want that anymore.
And time, please.
Thank you, to bring me to a place where I could truly let that go. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Leanne S. from Florida. Now we have Leslie W., followed by Elizabeth. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. This is Leslie W. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Georgia, formerly Tennessee. and I wanted to just jump in and share my thoughts about how easy it is for me to reach for that whiskey in the milk. And it's really a symbol of immediate comfort. You know, I am a creature of comfort. I reach out for things when the pain is too great. Something or someone, I mean, even if I have a relationship with God, I can sometimes push God aside in favor of something else that feels more tangible to me. And then even if I do have a relationship, that relationship can morph and change as events occur. If I begin to believe that God has forgotten about me or is punishing me for some reason, then I will begin to resent God for allowing this terrible event to occur in my life. And it's not like it happens to me cognitively. It's not like I say to myself, oh, I think I'll be angry with God today. Or, oh, I think God is just like everyone else that I, you know, feel has someone who has harmed me. Like, that's not true. That's not true. And, you know, God is not out to harm me. You know, God is not my ex-husband. And I have to remember that today. You know, I have to constantly remind myself, you know, and strengthen that relationship, because if I don't, then I'm going to believe that there's something better out there for me, something other than God. And there isn't anything better. You know, God is the only one that when I'm crying on the floor and there's nothing and no one else around, the only one who can really get me back up. Because at the end of the day, it's me and God, you know? And so I'm not saying we can't have other people in our lives to help us, because we absolutely can. And the people in this line and the people in this program are everything.
Time, please.
So I just want to say, with my utmost gratitude, thank you for allowing me to share and be a part of this fellowship. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you, Leslie W. from Georgia. Next up is Elizabeth, followed by Justin C. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for your service. My name is Elizabeth D., and I'm recovered in Massachusetts. More about alcoholism, the chapter is my favorite in the big book, and I think this story about Jim is my favorite story in this chapter. So many familiar words. They, on some levels, they feel very comforting because they are so familiar. But there's a real warning in here for me. I am a relapse survivor. I have spent a lot of time reviewing Jim's experience in the light of my own experience. And the unpleasant truth is that where it says here he had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all the reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only mixed with milk. The unpleasant truth is that all the knowledge in the world about this mental blank spot I have, even having the knowledge, all the analysis isn't going to give me or save me, isn't going to save me from that thought. The thought being, it'll be different this time. It'll just be a little bit. I'll start over on my food plan on Monday. I can put whiskey in my milk. It's all the same. And none of the self-knowledge, none of the knowledge of that is going to save me. I can even, in the midst of thinking, the thinking that's driving me back to those foods that are triggers, in the midst of those thoughts, I can have the vague sense I'm not being any too smart. I still pick up. Even after having abdominal surgery, where binging would be incredibly painful, even after being a cancer survivor and having my oncologist tell me I should keep my weight stable and not eat these trigger foods, even having raising a daughter on my own and being the only person she has in life, the only parent she has, and knowing that my eating disorder could kill me, despite all that and all the self-knowledge, I will still pick up these trigger foods. The only thing that will save me is the spiritual awareness that comes to me as a result of working these steps in entire abstinence. It is work for me every day.
Time, please.
Thank you, but it brings me joy, and this is the promise. The promise is the joy and the freedom and the peace that I have today, for which I am so grateful. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Elizabeth D. Justin C., it's your turn. Please go ahead.
Hey, everybody. Justin C., a compulsive reader from Charlotte, North Carolina. So grateful to be here this morning and for all of you being here as well. I thank God every day for vision and for this big book study. You know, it's fascinating to think about, for so many years, many years, my entire life, I was going through this cycle. I was up against this disease, this physical allergy, the mental blank spot, the obsession, without the knowledge. Right. And I did what I've heard many of you share, diets and exercise and changing what all the methods that we've tried. I've tried so many of them, with diminishing returns over time. But I really felt at home when I came here and you all introduced me to the knowledge, and I felt safe and secure with that. And then suddenly the thought came, right? So I can recognize now, after working through these steps and doing as little work as possible, self-will was still at the center of all of it. What I wanted to do was listen to this call sometimes. What I wanted to do is plan my meals sometimes. What I wanted to do is utilize some of these tools when it was, convenient for me. And then otherwise, I want to go about my life and I want to be thin. That's what I want. And what you all have shown me is that God is at the center of all of this. I need to seek this relationship. God needs to grow. God, I need to ask God to enter my thoughts today, reside with those ideas. Show me the way. I need help with everything. You know, abstinence for me is obviously very important, but it's just a tool. It's just a tool so that I can, my channels can be open to let God into my life. I want to live in the sunlight of the spirit today. You know, the physical and mental suffering, I mean, good God, you know, I want to be useful and of service. I don't want to waste away this life that God has given me. And so for today, I'll continue to seek that relationship above everything else. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Justin C. from North Carolina. And I'm sorry, Pete B. and Lauren N., we have run out of time. Maybe you can stick around for the next meeting. Thank you to everyone who shared, and thank you to Team Friday. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following the closing. And the share ID for today's meeting, Friday, the 7 a.m. meeting, is 216. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Anne Marie M. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, good morning, Lynn. Thank you for your service. This is Anne Marie M. in South Carolina. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do for each, for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.